This episode sponsored by Forkful. Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese. And every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.
I keep searching for the answers to my doubts. It's like I'm caught between belief and wanting out. There's this promise that my soul just cannot shake. I'm loved despite the struggles of my faith. And now that my eyes are open, I can see that I am stronger broken. You're the mystery that I put my hope in. The more I seek, the more I find.
The Deconstructionist Podcast is produced by Nicholas Rowe at the National Audio Preservation Society Recording Studio in Newark, Ohio.
Follow us on social media at www.thedeconstructionist.com, on Facebook at Deconstructionist Podcast, Twitter at Deconstructcast, and Instagram at Deconstructionist Podcast.
If listening to this podcast has benefited you in any way, consider making a donation. The donate link is in the show notes, or you can visit our website and click the donate tab.
Help me trust beyond what I'm not seeing, to be content with all this grace you've given. In my weakness, you are strong.
All right, welcome again, everybody, to the Deconstructionist Podcast. We are your excited hosts. We're always excited.
Absolutely.
We are your hosts, Adam Narlock and
John Williamson. What a weird week we've had, huh?
Oh my gosh, dude.
Well, we're really excited about this because this kind of concludes the third part to our unofficial trilogy of, I don't even know what we...
Did we even name this thing?
I don't think so. I was trying to think about that today.
Deconstructionist stories, maybe?
Yeah, or like deconstructing traumatic events in your life. That's too long.
Let's get personal.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I think this is really cool because obviously, those of you that have been following us the last few weeks, or at least listen to the last couple episodes, we kind of start off with a special kind of intimate interview conversation, really, with the musician Brendan Strawn from Monarch, followed by the one and only Momastery, Glennon Doyle Melton, which
good
is just
God.
Could she be nicer?
No.
Unbelievable.
Impossible.
She's just a giant heart
who
lives to give, you know, and I really hope her book was killing it, by the way. I happened to check the charts or whatever. It debuted I think number one,
on Amazon. When Oprah picks your book up and chooses it as like the Oprah Book Club.
The Opes.
You're gonna be okay.
I know, man. I know. When Oprah cradles you in her arms,
you're gonna be just fine at that point.
Oprah,
you can rest assured.
You can come on our show anytime.
We want Oprah.
We would love to have Oprah.
Oh, it'd be so fun, man. She'd have so many fun things to say. Like, yeah, that'd be awesome,
dude. She's killer. But yeah, so this is kind of the third part. The individual, the gentleman that we had the privilege of talking to this week, His name is Zach Bolin. And you may not know the name for those of you that don't live in the Seattle, Washington area, but he is most well known for being the former lead worship pastor at Mars Hill Church in the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And
under Pastor Mark Driscoll.
That's right. That's right. For those of you guys that remember.
I guess he's still a pastor. He's pastoring again.
Yeah.
Former pastor of Mars Hill Church.
Always a pastor in some fashion.
Yeah. Center of all kinds of evangelical controversy his entire life.
Yes. Oh, you're talking about Mark, yes.
Yeah, well, Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
Not you. You're not the center of evangelical controversy.
I thought you meant Zach.
Oh, yeah. Zach is definitely not the center of evangelical.
So I think he's trying to steer clear at
this
point.
He's like, get me out of here.
That will become very obvious momentarily.
Oh, I loved him.
But super, super nice guy. And he also is well known for being the lead singer of this incredible band, Citizens and Saints, which you guys will be hearing throughout this episode.
Samplings.
So they've got a new episode, or episode. We've got a new episode. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Are you tired?
I might be a little tired. Adam and I, you guys, I mean, we don't say this enough, but like Adam and I both have full-time jobs that are both just squeezing the life out of us right now.
We're trying to maintain our pace on this podcast. So
when you have to pull out two cups of coffee when you record your podcast in the evening, that's a bad sign.
John gets here after work and I just hand him a cup of coffee and we go downstairs.
You're like, all right, let's do this. Oh man. So he new album is what I meant to say. They have a new album coming out that is it's called A Mirror Dimly, and it is one of the most incredible pieces of music I've ever heard. It's, I think I called it, what did I call it? Part worship album and part personal journal.
Oh man, it was so good.
So, you guys are going to love it. We're definitely going to put all that information in the show notes. But really the reason we had, Zach on is because Zach has a really unique story. So,
Oh yeah.
So what, you know, you referenced this a little bit. What would you say would be kind of the theme of this one?
Well, I love that this is coming out now because I tweeted the other day. I don't know if you saw this, John. I don't know how close you follow our Twitter. I tweeted the other day, you know, what things do you question about faith and spirituality? What things leave you saying, you know, WTF in your mind when you look at them?
Yeah.
And so many people, a lot of people tweeted or emailed or responded in some way, shape, or form, maybe by message, whatever, that, you know, deconstructing like the church or mega churches or celebrity pastors or things like that is something that they look at and go like, what the?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talk about with Zach throughout this episode is, I'm going to paint in broad strokes here just for the sake of brevity, but like most mega churches need to die.
Yeah.
There's the mega church thing is just so co-opted by the power structures at play in the West, capitalism, empirical sort of institutionalization and celebrity pastors and all this stuff. And Mark Driscoll was, you know, kind of like when the internet bubble hit and like all of the podcasts started coming out in the early 2000s and just people using technology to advance their church platform. He was always like at the spearhead of that, the cutting edge. And then this guy fell from grace or whatever you want to call it. He essentially got fired for being an a-hole.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that, I'm not here to trash on Mark Driscoll. I don't know him. I'm not here to trash on him, but like got fired for, essentially for being an a-hole. I read the letter that they fired him. And then some of the other people that fired him ended up later on getting fired for being a-holes.
Right.
And it's just like, when is this going to stop? Like, when is this whole charade, this whole thing? So listeners that have wanted us to talk about some, like, you know, deconstructing megachurch, deconstructing celebrity pastor, deconstructing some of these really unhealthy things in the spiritual culture and climate of our country, we touch on those in a really personal, raw, honest way in this talk with Zach Bolin, who was in the thick of that stuff and made it out on the other end, deconstructed, reconstructed, has new eyes to see things. And it's really a beautiful conversation. You know, we We talk about it. He says in his press release on this album, the one of the best days in the history of Seattle, Washington is when Mars Hill shut its doors.
Yep.
I mean, you can't really. So this is not an episode where we're looking to trash on any particular people. We don't do that. We stay away from that. We don't want this podcast to become the water cooler of church gossip or anything like that. But things happen and they need to be talked about. And so we're gonna talk about it with Zach Bolin, and he is fantastic.
Yeah.
Insightful, imaginative, soft, humble, creative, wonderful. This was a blast.
I would just say, after you get done listening to this episode, first of all, this episode will drop about, I think, 2 days before the album releases. It comes out on the 16th, September 16th, that Friday. So go out and get it. One of the biggest things that struck me, and we talk about this a little bit in the episode, are just the, like I said, the personal journal portion of it is just really, lyrically, you can see him like this guy who's just really having an honest struggle with life as a result of this kind of traumatic situation that occurred with his job and church.
Yeah.
And I just recommend people sit down with that and just let that sink in and absorb and really just look over those words. And I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
So
without further ado.
Yeah.
Zach freaking Bolin.
Just want to shout it out for the words you hear it. I'm his kid no matter what I'm feeling. I'm doubting doubts that just cannot
Zach Bolin, we are just thrilled. We're delighted, really excited to have you to be on the Deconstructionist podcast today, man. Thanks for being with us.
Guys, thank you. I've been listening for a while now, and it's an honor, honestly, to be able to be doing this with you guys. Because, I mean, when we were talking about, you know, how do we want to share this record, you guys were definitely on that list of people we wanted to talk with, because I think we have a lot in common, but too, I think there's a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast will find our music to kind of hopefully speak to a little bit maybe where they're at. So
I think that's going to happen without a doubt.
Yeah. 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 That is, by the way, a crazy and weird thing for us to hear. So,
so weird.
We're so far removed from, I think, for most of the people that probably listen to our show, stuck in a basement in Columbus, Ohio. So it's always weird and in a nice way to hear that. So thank you.
So thanks for starting off with a big ego boost for
us. Yeah. We're going to pat each other on the back now. It's going to be
whatever. Well, what you're doing is we're reaching all the way out here to the West Coast. So,
that's crazy.
There.
That is so awesome, man.
But we love it, man. That's such great news to hear. So, as we get started here, I think the best place to start with you would be maybe talk a little bit about, you know, how you were raised. Were you raised in, you know, a religious household? And obviously, for people that don't know you, you up until I think recently were a worship leader. So how did your life progress to a point where you became a worship leader? Is that something that you wanted to do from childhood, or is that something that just kind of fell into place?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like my upbringing goes, I mean, I did grow up in a religious home. My mom and dad, they met, sort of out of high school and, eventually got married. And, my dad grew up in the church. My mom, she didn't. And so she became a Christian later and kind of before they got married. And so I grew up going to church. And then when I was six, my dad died. And actually, I have a lot of memories. I mean, he led. It's funny because I feel like we would be, if he were alive today, we'd be very different people. Just based on what I know of him. I remember him leading like the youth choir even and stuff like that out of church. He died, and then naturally, as you can imagine, that was really hard on my mom, hard on my brother and I too. But we were young, you know, we didn't really have a capacity to understand just sort of the gravity of death and, you know, something that's like that final, as far as, you know, what we experience on Earth. And so, my mom really wrestled through a lot of depression. And so that kind of created a bit of tension in our house. And so for me, I kind of had my like greatest supporters really were my dad's side of the family, and his sisters, but then also, just the church, you know. And it's funny because as I grew up, I don't know, like, it's funny. I used to feel all this pressure and embarrassed because I didn't have like that story of I was on my knees and prayed this specific prayer at kids' church or whatever. I don't know. But I do remember going to my dad's grave when I was 14. And at that point, things were pretty tumultuous between my mom and I because she had remarried and that wasn't going well. And she had just divorced and there was just a lot of stuff there. So I as a teenager, there was a lot of things I didn't understand. Mm. And so when I went to his grave, that particular day, I think it was either the anniversary of his death or something. I just always thought it was really weird going to a grave. So I never liked it. I never enjoyed it. It just felt so strange to me. Meanwhile, all that time I kind of wrestled a lot with this idea that my pathway to God was not Jesus, but it was my dad. And so I kind of like prayed to my dad even, you know, as a young kid, and I just wanted to talk to him so badly, you know, I just wanted to care so badly. Like when my mom was kind of spiraling, like in all honesty, and you know, we've had good conversations over the years since, but like, I didn't want my mom. I wanted my dad, you know, because in my mind, he was this person who would never let me down, who would just always be there and this faithful, steady rock. And I just had this false view of him. And so when I was 14 at his grave, it just, for some reason, I don't want to say it was the first time, but it's kind of like just that light bulb comes on. And I just grieved really heavy that day. And I also know that was the beginning of me realizing that I was just enthralled and worship really of my dad, and just seeing that, you know, no matter how great of a man he was, in the end, like God loved me, and he wasn't, you know, ashamed of me for believing all these things all those years, but was like welcoming me to be in relationship with him, to be his son. And so I just think that was the beginning of that whole process. And so from there, I started to really, I'd gotten into music some along the way, but we had a youth group and I would play music sometimes and do stuff like that. And I kind of left, eventually graduated high school and left feeling, despite growing up in the church I was a part of was really, honestly, terrible. I'm not... And I don't even say that. I could probably say a lot worse. So many of my friends that I grew up with that were part of that church, you know, it was small, but, you know, they don't want to have anything to do with God anymore. And I just find that to be so reflective of just sort of the posture and the leadership of that church, you know. And so by the time I left, I remember, and I'll never forget this, and it just was like such a interesting prayer that I would pray, and God totally answered it. I remember I was going to be leaving Maryland. That's where I grew up, going down to Savannah, Georgia to go to this art school down there. And I just prayed, God, I feel like I don't belong here. And I just pray that you allow me to be a part of a church in Savannah that would welcome me as like part of their family. Mm. And, my first day in Savannah, I'm walking around and I meet these two dudes that are part of this church, and we wind up forming a friendship and are still friends today. And I wound up being a part of that church, and it was really, really special. And so that, in that time, is when I kind of started to get into song leading really. And, they knew I was a musician, and And so really people were just really helpful and teaching me a lot of really great stuff. But that's kind of where the story breaks down, because with hindsight, I see a lot of things that I'm having to unlearn, if you will.
What do you mean?
Well, because I think when I was there, I was really excited. You know, it was a bigger church. I came from a small church that was pretty alluring, which I think is the story for a lot of people that have been a part of bigger churches. And, I also, it was a stage, all these different things. Mm. It was like this production that was sort of sold to me as like this really great thing.
Oh man.
And I see now that what I was doing was buying into a lot of that. But thankfully along the way, like God just totally just, I mean, honestly, like showed me through a lot of friends and my wife and just the experiences of being around. I worked a lot with high school kids and middle school kids, and just realizing that I wasn't just this dude who's like the worship monkey who just jumps around on stage and makes kids laugh,
man,
or jump around, but that I actually had more to offer than that. And so that honestly didn't, all of it really crystallized for me after Mars Hill. So I moved to Savannah, thought I would do sound design, professionally, like in film. Then, my wife and I get married 6 months later, feeling like maybe we should. They'd offered me a job at the church months before, and I said no. I didn't want to work at the church because I thought that that's where families go to die. Seriously, all my friends, it was just like, good grief, all your families, it sounds like your wives are miserable.
Yeah.
And so I was really like hesitant to it all. And then we prayed about it, felt like it was the right thing. And then spent 3.5 years in it. And in that time, God definitely changed my perspective a lot. And I'm really grateful for that. And it helped shape the perspective that I have today that I still think is good. But then it went from that was a mega church. Then it went to another mega church in St. Louis to help start a college ministry, and only to find out that this church just did not want a college ministry.
Oh man, that sucks.
And then realizing in that time that I don't even agree with college ministry. I don't think that this is very helpful in some ways. And not that it's bad to reach college students. I just didn't agree with the way that we were approaching it. And then moving out to Seattle to become a worship director at a church at Mars Hill, or one of the Mars Hill churches. And then, fast forward all the way to the end, 3 years later after that, it's like, whoa, this church is completely, is falling apart. And I don't want to work in the church anymore. And so I think that what I've realized in all of it is it's rare that somebody gets three experiences, especially like a husband and wife, three experiences at three different mega churches. I feel like I was able to see the good and the bad. And when we walked out of it, we just decided the mega church isn't for us. We're just not going to be part of that anymore. And we also decided that, I resigned because I felt like I couldn't lead with a good conscience anymore. And there's a whole lot to that. But in its most simple form, that was kind of the main reason I resigned. I felt like it was really misleading to a lot of the people that were hurting there. And so I resigned, and it felt like we'd be betraying ourselves if we just went after another job at the church to pay the bills.
Man.
So we just said, like, we're not going to do that. We're not going to get a job at another church. We're going to trust God. And man, months after I resigned, some friends of ours just are amazing. They like started this like GoFundMe, and a bunch of people at the church just like helped pay our rent for 6 months. Yeah, it's insane, and those are all like former Mars Hill people. Because I mean, despite the leadership that was really, just piss poor, at the end of the day, like the people there were still like just amazing.
That's awesome, man.
It wasn't all like messed up. And so they helped us, and that was really humbling. And in that time, like just different things with Citizens. We felt like, hey, let's keep the band going. God provided other jobs, and then just I just realized I'd been believing this lie that had been fed to me from that seed that was planted in Savannah. And that's basically that, like, you're gifted in this and there's really nothing else in life that you should be doing. And I just like look back on it all and I'm like, man, I appreciate all the ways that people have poured into me. I don't want to take any of that for granted because it was very, I'm really grateful. But at the same time too, I think that there was these unintentional seeds planted along the way that the only way for me to serve Jesus, the only way for me to serve the church was if I was a paid employee. And that if I wasn't that I was betraying Jesus, I was betraying his church, I was betraying the people that he'd called me. It was just like all these different things. Because even after I resigned, people are like, wait, you're not going to work at a church anymore? And it's like, wait a second. I'm realizing now that my entire, everything that everyone's view, or not everyone, a lot of people's view of me is that all I can do is that all I'm really gifted for is that. And I don't think that they were saying it in a way of like, oh, that's all you're good for. But it's more like in terms of, well, this is what you have to be doing. And just seeing, no, God, I can do a lot of different stuff and provide for my family and still love and serve the church. And that's what I feel like I've been doing for the past few years post Mars Hill. And I feel just as fulfilled and just as, I feel like there's been, you know, as many sweet stories as I ever had working at the church as I've had just serving the church as a volunteer and getting to do the stuff with this band. So
that's awesome, man.
So it's kind of good to go back a little bit. For those that are listening that aren't familiar with the Mars Hill Church, churches, I should say, you know, it's this huge mega church, tens of thousands of members, and went through some very public issues, you know, and ultimately that led to the dissolution of this network of churches. And you kind of reflected on this a little bit, and I'd love for you to go into this a little bit more, but you know, all of these people who attended these churches for so long are kind of left now, you know, kind of on their own. And as you said, you know, for a time you weren't really sure what the future was going to look like for you. You know, you talked about, you know, continuing the band, but looking at a life, looking forward to a life that wasn't necessarily, you know, one that received a paycheck from the church. Mm-hmm. So, talk a little bit about like what did that look like for a lot of the people that were surrounding you? How did your community respond, to kind of that kind of tragic experience?
Yeah.
Oh man. It was like an ongoing funeral, honestly. I mean,
wow.
'Cause people, I, you know, having been a pastor at the church, you know, there was only, I don't know how many, 50 of us. I had a lot of close friends that were pastors who, you know, were still trying to just meet with Mark and have conversations and still are. And that's the thing that's really challenging for a lot of people is, you know, for them, their whole experience wasn't wrapped up into one person, but it definitely influenced that as a lot of their vision. And a lot of the things that they did and the sacrifices they made were because this one person was delivering these vision speeches and sort of kind of coming down pretty heavy handed on, and you kind of feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing it this way, then I'm wrong. Or at towards the end there, it's like a lot of people, not just people who worked at the church, but were like, am I taking crazy pills? You know, because all the media is talking about this, yet all the leaders are showing like a baptism video this Sunday after just another big, you know, news thing breaks, as if like everything at Mars Hill is awesome. And so I think it was really hard on people. And I don't think a lot of people try and make it about Mark, but it's not that. It's that the hardest thing was that community was really special. You know, those people, those friendships, that was years and years and years of people where you'd built these relationships with people, and then to just have that completely be split apart, that's just not an easy thing to just immediately accept. And so it's been years of recovery and healing for people, and that still are. But I do think that one of the biggest things, you know, and this is even before I resigned, Mars Hill, it was a stumbling block. It was a complete stumbling block in the city because it wasn't looked at as like this light or as this, you know, place of a hopeful word or or a church that's going to help change the city or make it better. It was just a, it was just known as this place that's like this eyesore. And it almost got to the point where it was like you felt ashamed to even tell people that you worked there or that you went there. And that just shouldn't be the case. And so I think that people, honestly, despite all the pain, I think a lot of people feel freer than they ever have, because it's almost like I can just say I'm a part of this church and are a part of this other church that doesn't have some crazy stigma attached to it or some later leader who's, you know, narcissistic egomaniac. And I can just where the church, where as soon as I say the church name, they don't immediately start talking about the leader. It's like half the time now I can just say what church I go to and they don't even know who the leader is. What the church is. And so I just think that it was a good day when Marcel closed its doors, because it was hard, and not everyone will agree with me with that, and that's fine. I don't really personally care to even debate that with them, because when you look at just the when you look at the amount of people that have been wounded and hurt by particular leaders, but also just Marcel as an organization, it's just like, you know what? This isn't working. Like, something about this isn't working. And I think a lot of it is that they really were about building an empire. They wanted to build a kingdom. They wanted to build this monument. And I think what I personally believe is that Marcel is just a foreshadowing of what's to come in a lot of mega churches in America. I think that in 20, 30 years, all the guys who, you know, the churches, and I don't think, putting philosophy aside, the churches that are really big, like proponents of video teaching, I think that when those pastors that have been the ones primarily on that screen are the ones that resign, it'll be pretty clear which ones were really most passionate about doing it that way, as opposed to just raising up other leaders. That was the case at Marcel. As soon as Mark resigned, what did the leaders say? Well, none of us want to do video teaching, so let's just let all the other churches become autonomous. That's insane to me.
That is like, seriously insane.
Immediately you'd be like, oh, well, we don't want to do video teaching. We never did. So it just shows like the complete fear of man. No one wanted to just stand up and say, hey, excuse
me.
And I think that is consistent in so many churches. I just think people are scared to say what they're thinking. Leaders are. And I felt that at Marcel.
I didn't even know that we were going to go here. And I love it, because one of the things that John and I talk about a lot, and I think it's a subtext in a lot of our episodes, because, I mean, you get what we're doing here, and the people that listen kind of get what we're doing here. We're kind of a tongue-in-cheek sort of, you know, self-proclaimed, I don't know, prophet, whatever. But, like, you know, the thing that I think we all know when we talk about the church being sick, if it, like, there's one thing that makes it sick, it's this imperialistic, empire-based, co-opted by capitalism, disgusting, you know, thing. And that's what I hear you saying. And I didn't even know you were going to say any of that. And I just, I hope people that listen to this, because I know there's people that work at lots of churches that don't admit that they listen to this show, but they do. And that's great, because, you know, that's what we want to do, is just, you know, slowly and subversively and openly and humbly just encourage people to think for themselves. And what you're saying is, like, in a lot of these situations, it's this thing that John and I talk about all the time. It's belief by proxy. It's like, whatever you say. Yeah. You believe for me. You just show me the road. Hey, what he says, what she says, what that book says, what that author says, whatever. Mm. And people need to wake up, man. That is not healthy. Mm. It's not a healthy way to live. It's not a healthy way to build. It's not a healthy way to progress. And it sounds like you are representative of a lot of people that have suffered trauma when that eventually breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually that breaks down. And that brings us to talk a little bit about your album that it seems was birthed out of this. And let me tell you something, Zach. When John and I heard this album, we heard something fresh. We heard something honest. We heard something genuine to who you are and who you always kind of have been. You shared your spiritual autobiography with us, and all of that is present in the album, but it's in this very, very different way than we currently experience with a lot of the mainstream, kind of what's on the radio, what's kind of being pumped out at conferences, what's, you know, all that kind of stuff that I think a lot of us, if we're going to be honest, are sort of choking on and kind of saying, okay, enough. Would somebody just be honest? And And one of the things that you said in when you sent us your album, this paragraph that you wrote, which we thought was so poignant, and then we just want to kind of talk about this record a little bit, is you said this record wouldn't exist if it weren't for the fall of Mars Hill as an organization. You said one of the best days in the history of Seattle was the day Mars Hill shut its doors. And you talk about this darkness, but then all through the album are these big bursts of just hope and redemption and honesty and breathing. And I just start talking to us a little bit about how this became a project and how it's been different for you and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of goes back to the question you asked earlier about like how did that affect friends and people that were part of Mars Hill, because what it did was all of a sudden, you know, it's not like the church was destroyed. It's just the organization. So we were all spread out, but you still have conversations with people and you hear about all the brokenness they have and all the hurts they have and even all the doubts they're dealing with. And it's like, man, I'm in the same place. Mm. And so I think there's a lot of camaraderie there. But I think also what all of us were experiencing that I think was pretty interesting was just being loved by God in a way that we never had before or experiencing that. And I think that's because when you spend a lot of years at a place where you hear God loves you, but it's just shouted at you, it's different. You know, you just receive. So it's almost like a footnote rather than like, oh, that's like the gospel, God's love.
Man.
And so that really influenced this record. And honestly, too, there were dark times for us, too. You know, not dark in the sense of wasn't the point of necessarily. I wasn't at the point of just denouncing God altogether, but it was more or less just realizing there are a lot of, in fact, there's a song on the record called Bad Madness that originally was called Borrowed Belief. And I kind of talk about it a little bit in that song, but originally it was all about that, how so much of our belief system is just borrowed because of what you just said. Pastor said that, some person told me this, and I need to, you know, hold on to that. And I think probably, you know, I even personally, like when I was a kid, people used to tell me all the time, well, there's a passage in the Bible that says that God pulls back the curtain for loved ones to look down. And I held on to that. And then I get like older and I'm like, where the hell is this thing in the Bible?
It's where's that verse?
It's not there. Good luck.
God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just a bunch of cliches. And I just realized that's what we need to make our record about, because that's what we're wrestling through, is a bunch of cliches. Even it's all about Jesus. It became a cliche.
Yeah.
And so I even just like worked really hard to write the record in a way where it's like we're talking about God to God without necessarily having to use the only name that we use, you know, the common pronouns, but there's other ways to talk to God. There's other ways to talk about him. And the Bible gives us so many examples of that. Like the first song on the record, it's, you know, three different names, you know, of how we could, you know, look at God and label him. You know, it's like Man of Sorrows, the Resurrected King. I'm forgetting the other one, the Humble King. Just a lot of different ways that we can sort of look at who God is that I think almost gives us a really more robust imagination.
When we think about it
in that way. And so that's really, this record was, yes, coming out of a lot of hurt and pain. And just searching, but also realization that we're loved and loved no less when we doubt. And I think that was pretty remarkable to me, because I spent a lot of years when people would come to me and share doubts, I'd just give them a stack of books, or I would try and explain away that doubt rather than just hearing them out. And so that's what we realized is like, man, there's a lot of people that are feeling burnt out and just feeling like they're over this party mentality. They're over this, this pendulum swing. And I think we just wanted to write something that was personal and honest. And we weren't really even thinking about people that much, if I were honest. Not that we didn't care about people. It's just that we felt like if we're going to make something that we really believe in, it's got to first start with us pouring out all of our experiences into it. that would influence the way we write this, and not just being general. And so I think that's why when people listen to this record, they'll hear it they'll hear something that they haven't heard from us before, because we just threw away generalities and just tried to be as specific as possible about this journey of faith that we're on.
Yeah, I remember I think the first time I listened to it from beginning to end, I called Adam, and the first thing I said is, you know, this is one of the most incredible albums I've ever heard. I mean, it's just phenomenal, both, you know, musically, lyrically, you know, all of those things. It's a very complete album from front to back. And it's funny you brought up Madness, because Adam and I were literally just staring at the lyrics just now. That's one that really stuck out to me, because to me it seemed that the other thing I told Adam is I said this seems like part worship album and part like I'm reading this guy's journal.
Yeah.
And so to your point of it being very personal, if I could, I just want to read. I mean, I could have picked any of the verses in this song, but this really just spoke to me, and I think would speak to a lot of the listeners that we have. Shadows of doubt stealing my sleep. I'm wearing down without any relief. Tired eyes and a tangled up soul. I'm feeling lost. I don't know. They keep on trying to soothe my grief, but all that's left is borrowed belief. It's truth I need, not another cliche. Your word is my hope for a steady faith. And I remember hearing that. I remember thinking, man, that is spot on.
Dude, that's so good.
You know, so many of us are you know, have either gone down that road or are going down that road as we speak. And I think some of the other interviews that we've had with other musicians who, you know, at one point or another were probably categorized as a Christian, quote, Christian band, have all struggled with this fact that Christian music or mainstream music, either way you go or either way you label it, just seems to have a real lack of honesty. And we seem to avoid kind of these major questions and, you know, like I'll doubt, but, you know, in quiet, you know, in my basement where no one can see it. Right.
Yeah.
So
like a neutered form of the doubt.
Yeah.
Like I'm not really doubting. I just used the word.
Right.
But I'm okay. I'm okay.
It's, let's pretend. No, yeah. Let's pretend like we don't have doubts. You know,
a complete like passive way of dealing with maybe something that's pretty heavy. So.
Oh yeah.
So I guess the question I'm leading up to is obviously this very much appears like it was a therapeutic way for you to kind of process some of the things that you're dealing with as a result of this kind of negative church experience. So does this continue to be kind of therapy for you? Is this something that was therapy for the other guys in the band as well?
Oh, completely, man. Yeah. I mean, I think like what you just said, like it's like a journal. I mean, I think that song in particular, Madness, I had 10 pages of lyrics, you know, just, and
wow.
It's the only song I've ever written this way. And it's because there's so many directions I wanted to go with it. So at one point it'd be about borrowing belief from others. Another time it would just be all about grief. And it's just like, why? And as time came, you know, as the more I wrote, the more I realized, okay, I can pull all these things together and kind of talk about it all. I just have to take the time to really write it in a way that feels natural, like it's a conversation. And I think that part of the reason the song sounds the way it does is I think it wasn't that I had 10 pages of lyrics. It was more just 10 pages of thoughts and like verbal processing, which is how I am with stuff. I just talk until it all makes sense, which is a little bit maddening for my wife, but she's stuck with me for 10 years now, so hopefully she'll stay there. But I do think that, like, with that song in particular, it has, you know, or just the record in general, it has been therapy, you know, for us to make it, but also to be able to listen back to it and realize that, you know, what we hoped we would create is what was created. And that was a record that spoke to sort of the journey that comes in life of searching. In particular, this perspective is one as a Christian, but one that I feel like any person could like jump in and probably find a song that they identify with most, regardless of what they believe. I'm not naive enough to think that a bunch of people that don't believe in God are just going to like flock to this record, but because I do think it is pretty, you know, clear what we're talking about, but we weren't trying to be, it's not propaganda, you know, we're not just trying to use a bunch of words to, you know, talking with Adam the other day about this, it's like I just want to de-Christianize myself. So that's probably part of the reason that there was 10 pages. It's, oh my gosh, like I wouldn't even say that in a conversation with someone. I'm not going to sing that. And that's stuff I never did in the past. I never did that. And that's not to diminish any of our other records. It's just that I feel like this one is the most honest thing that we've done. And I think that's why, so far, the few songs that people have heard are finding themselves really encouraged by it, because I don't think it's so much just, I don't even know that. Maybe it'll be inspiration for a bunch of other musicians and writers out there to just, whatever Christian music world they're in, to just feel like they don't have to appeal to everybody. They don't have to cast such a wide net, but they can just write about where they are and know that that's okay. And not everything needs to be looked at as like, is it marketable, you know? So.
Well, I think that to tie back into something else you observed while you were just kind of reminiscing about the whole Mars Hill breakdown and the, you know, the imperialistic kind of capitalistic megachurch doom that, you know, we're all kind of prophesying in one way or another, is that, you know, as that breaks down, as that empire breaks down, as that, we'll call it the imaginary, you know, to borrow a Pete Rollins kind of word, you know, this just, it's not real. You know, there's this, there's this fake thing that we just all inflate and need it to be big, so we feel like our faith is big. And, you know, with that comes all this restriction, all these boundaries that aren't real, and all this feeling, you know, John and I always talk about feeling really claustrophobic in those spaces. Like, this is just too small. You're trying to make this big thing, but what you're making is this really small thing. And to go back to what you're talking about, creativity, I think when that breaks down, this is just Adam's thoughts that, you know, Adam's thoughts plus Adam's thoughts and a nickel won't even get you a cup of coffee. So, you know, don't take this for what it is. But I think that when that breaks down, that free creativity that you're talking about will continue to actually flow and release, because people won't have this false expectation that they're just trying to fit into, and they can actually start to do what the ancients, what the prophets, what the mystics, you know, what the artists back in the day did. They found the beauty of Christianity, which has always been incarnation. It's divine and human, and done justice to both divine and human, you know, the full expressions of both. And I think that you're doing that, and I think a lot of people are going to start to do that. So I hope that this is the pebble that starts the avalanche in a lot of ways. Now, I want to talk a little bit about one of your songs and read you a couple lyrics here. One of the songs I really connected with was Relent, and the bridge was just like this. Oh man, just the way that the music is on the bridge. We're going to play a little bit of it here. And just, it's really beautiful how you constructed it musically and lyrically. And you say in these lyrics in the bridge, I just want to live in peace, but I'm struggling to believe that letting go will bring me peace. Can I just sit here at your feet? And I don't know if you were talking about your friends. I don't know if you were talking about God. It doesn't really matter to me. I'm not asking you to explain it, but what I would like to is just to hear a little bit about like where you were when those kinds of lyrics come out, because I feel like a lot of Christian leaders just aren't comfortable saying things like that. And I think it's beautiful. And I'd love to just hear your thoughts about like kind of where you were when those kinds of lyrics start to take root and you want to write them, sing them and let them out.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, interestingly enough, they just came in a moment when we were rehearsing the record or rehearsing that song. I had the verses and the chorus done, and we got to this bridge part, and I just finished singing the lyrics of the chorus, and we kind of just played through that part for a while. And the first thing that I just could not get out of my head was like, I just want to live in peace, you know? And I was just feeling that in that moment of this complete, just feeling completely tired and exhausted from trying to find answers to every single question I had. And there just came this point when I was like, you know what? Surely I can bring all this stuff to God. But at the same time, I am struggling to believe if that will actually bring me peace. I know it's what it says. I know what it reads. I know what I've heard in sermons and whatever, but will it actually bring me peace? And I think for me in that song, it's like that point of, can I just sit here? Can I just like sit here, say nothing, and just be? And that's when you get into the bigger part, you know, I know that I belong because this is right where I belong. It's like, this is the place I'm meant to be, you know? And so that's where I think I was at, was just realizing that all the chaos and mess that was in my head, I felt like in that moment even. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it wasn't just, you know, sometimes you hear like the old Rolling Stone stories of like Mick Jagger just singing a bunch of vowels and that eventually like forming his stuff. Right. You can't even understand half his lyrics anyway, so that's probably true. But I love the Rolling Stones. But I just think in this, it wasn't that. It was just like in that moment, that's just exactly what I was thinking. And even as I went back to try and finish up the lyrics, I just couldn't let that go. I could not let those lyrics go. And I think that's honestly probably, I mean, interestingly enough, because you're right, there's a lot of Christian leaders who probably wouldn't say that. But I mean, what if it was God leading me to say that, you know? Like,
yeah,
what if,
man,
God was just like speaking and I was just, you know, communicating something that was true to where I was at, and God wasn't shaming me and wasn't feeling like that was wrong or you know, needed to be PC, but it was just something that was honest. And I felt that, and I still do. And I still feel that some days where, you know, I could run this rat race of trying to just trying to run away from whatever pain is there or whatever questions I'd have and try and just ignore it. But I think that's like one of the most exhausting things, is just to pretend, you know, you mentioned earlier, just to live in this pretend world, and that's not our reality. And I think that if we were more honest with each other and with God, we'd acknowledge like we're tired, we're exhausted by our own volition, but we're also tired because we live in a world that, you know, is exhausting. There's a lot of stuff that we're confronted with. And so, I think that's where I was at when that lyric came together.
That's beautiful, man. One of the things that I love you're kind of touching on also is a theme that comes out in our podcast a lot. It's like, you know, when we're dealing with these big, giant mysteries of life, you know, our existence, our identities, our faith or lack thereof, you know, the divine itself, there's only so much you can say. And a lot of it's just like words that create space for just unknowing.
Yeah.
And I pick that up in a lot of what you're saying. And I just feel like that there's something so genuine about that. I wonder if that has anything to do with just the album title. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I think that was the realization too, is that we're just in evangelicalism, it's like, we're so confident. We're so confident in everything, you know? And it's like, what in the world, man? Like, Christianity is insane. Like, I'm sitting here saying I believe in a God I can't see. I'm you know, it's just like, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
And I think that, like, when you really, but it's crazy to talk about.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, there's something within us when we know that God is there and he's present within us. There's just some things we just don't even know how to explain. And I think we just have to be, we have to be okay with that.
Man.
And so I think that's where the Amir Dimly part comes in. It comes from, you know, 1 Corinthians 13. At the end, where Paul is kind of talking about spiritual gifts and love and how we have this understanding of God that is veiled right now. You know, it's still a mystery, but one day that won't be there. You know, we'll look, and it's as if those like fogged glasses or that blurry mirror or that, you know, foggy glass, whatever it is, like we'll be able to look and it won't be there anymore. There's just be clarity. And, you know, I think that for us, like, that's what we wanted to create, was that even though there is mystery, like, we can still have faith in the midst of mystery. And even though there's mystery, we can still have doubt. But it's like that dance between faith and doubt, where as we keep moving forward and we discover things, I have personally found in my life that I get to places where I'm okay with not needing to have the answers for everything.
That's awesome,
I think that's really what that record, what that title is meant to say, is that we don't have the answers to everything and we need to chill out a little bit.
Cause that's really good, dude.
I think our confidence is just an interpretation in particular of certain things has just created so much confusion for people, you know?
Yeah.
And we could go through a list of topics. We know what those, you know, many of those are, the hot button ones at least. But it's like, at the end of the day, why don't we just start by having confidence and just sort of the foundational truths of the gospel, which is that we're loved, you know, we're loved no matter what. And I think that to me, that out of that flows a much deeper longing and desire to want to discover more, but also be okay in the mystery because we know who we are. We're loved. And that's really what that title's getting at. No, I'm not who I was.
Oh, that's good, man.
Man.
Well, as we kind of come to a close here, one of the things we like to do is try to give people some practical advice. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about your personal story is the fact that, you know, you not only worked at one mega church, but multiple mega churches and spent a large part of your career in this leadership position. And we have a ton of people in various different, you know, parts, I guess, of leadership, you know, whether it's a pastoral role or, you know, worship or, you know, multiple different types of roles who reach out to us and, you know, usually on the down low, you know,
right? Yeah.
secretly, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, are expressing the exact same concerns and the exact same doubts. And so what advice would you give from your kind of unique perspective of, you know, how to wade through that? You know, what kind of advice would you give those who are listening, who are kind of, you know, either who have had, you know, positions similar to yours or are working for, you know, a large church currently?
Yep. Well, I think the first thing that I've come to realize is that the majority of the leaders, actually, with the exception of one, because I don't think all mega churches are bad. I don't. I know a lot of really great people and churches that are bigger churches that I really respect and love and admire their efforts to try and continue planting churches and serve their communities. But of a couple of those churches I've worked at, some of those leaders, which I'm sure you can guess one, just never talked about, were never honest about who they were. Like they never talked about sin, their own stuff, their own struggles. It was always general stuff. And I just came to realize, like, I don't trust those people. Like, no matter how, you know, like, I sat through years and years at the first church I was a part of where they would give these, we'd have these pastor meetings of 30 guys. And, man, maybe one of them are listening. We'll listen to this. I don't know. But we would do, you know, 3 hours of this moral authority talk. And not, and it's just, like, all about, you know, making these decisions because you make this one decision and it's going to, you know, crumble the church and all this stuff. It was just as if, like, you can't even sin. Like, I can't even mess up. Like, if I, so then what happens is if I mess up, what am I going to do? I'm not going to tell anybody. Jeez, if like my wife and I are really struggling, I'm not going to tell anybody because now people are going to think I'm a terrible person because my wife and I got into a fight, you know?
All too common sale, man.
Yeah, man. And so I think to me, the biggest thing I would just encourage people with is like, you can't change people. But you can, you know, be who you are. And if you feel like, you know, I would just encourage people to just be honest with who they are and with where they're at and to not grow bitter toward those people that maybe don't do that, but pray for them and just be, don't like wait to, for like the perfect opportunity to say something, just say it, you know, like, I think that's the, one of the biggest problems in big churches is that there's these hierarchies created where the particular leaders are just, they're exalted. And as if they're like these like biblical monsters who are, you know, like, as if like we're not a part of the same branch, you know, as if like they're a branch above us and we're a different branch. Man. Like that is so common. And in reality, it's like, no, like look at that person, that leader, as you guys are part of the same branch. And if you feel like the Holy Spirit is leading you to say something, then do it and trust that like it's not worth like your job. Like at the end of the day, I know that sounds crazy, but don't do it because you're scared about keeping your job, or don't not do it because you're scared about keeping your job. Like I think that sounds crazy, but I think that's where we got to start looking at, you know, church is it's a calling. It's not a job. And I think when we make it a job, it gets messy and murky, and that's when empires start getting built. And so I think that it's just like honesty is the, you know, walking in the light. I you know, 1 John 1:7, my kids, I write them little Bible songs all the time just to
oh, that's, you
know,
awesome.
That's awesome.
Just
man.
Just like little verses just to, you know, we can sing, and I don't know, I just thought that'd be a really sweet way for them to learn about God and kind of recall as they grow. And one of them is 1 John 1:7. We just talk about all the time, like, you don't walk in the light, it's not, you just, it's that you have no fellowship with believers. Like the fellowship isn't there. Like there's the friendship. So it's like, why rob yourself of friendship?
Wow.
With the people that God has called you to be with by not walking in the light, by like hiding and thinking that you can do that forever, because you can't. And so,
dude,
I don't know, man. I think that that's, to me, become a priority for me and whatever church I'm a part of, but to like, just for people to really look for and be honest about, you know, really what's going on where they are.
Well, just to tack on to that, you know, as we're closing here, because you're kind of already saying it, but just to a different group of people, what about all those people that have just gotten railroaded, that are just bleeding on the side of the road because the church has just rejected them or run over them or just crushed mm-hmm. them? Or, you know, obviously it's never one-sided, it's never unilateral, it's, you know, there's always participation from both, but there's a lot of hurting people, man. There's a lot of people that have just gotten, seems like, just shot by these huge, however big, actually. And, you know, I'm not necessarily looking for you to give them advice. You can if you want, but like, do you, what kind of just thoughts from your heart do you have for them as we're closing?
Yeah, I think it's, well, I mean, the first thing I would just say is I'm sorry. That really sucks, you know, like I've been in that spot, and I know a lot of people who have. And I think for my own experience, because that's really probably the most apt thing I can share. And even my wife and I mean, coming out of Mars Hill, I mean, my wife, I know she wouldn't mind me sharing this, but I mean, there are many days where she's just like, why even be a part of the church anymore? You know, like, why should we even go? Like, what is the point of this? If all the leaders that we're under are just going to wind up being, pardon, you know, a bunch of like kind of narcissistic assholes, you know, like they would.
And I
think that that was a really difficult thing for her to grapple with. And then I found myself in the same spot. It's like, yeah, you're right. Like, why? And I just think, like, at the end of the day, it's just realizing that, like, no matter how great the leader is, they're all human, just like you and me. And realizing that the church that we want to be a part of is one where everybody doesn't have to believe the same exact thing, you know, where every single interpretation doesn't have to be identical. And that there can be some really beautiful things in that. And I do believe there are churches in every community and city where there are people that way. They might not be like the prettiest church. They might not have the coolest music. They might not have like the best preaching, but I know they're there because there's people in every community that are living that out. They just maybe aren't as well known in that way. And so I just think, like, not losing hope. And that was the biggest thing for me. Like when the cloud pulled away from Mars Hill, it was like, well, there's a lot of amazing churches here. And I went there, and, you know, we were part of one now. We've been there for 2 years, and those people there have been so gracious to us. You know, no matter how angry we've been, no matter how much stuff we've had to deal through, wrestle through and walk through, they've stood by us. And I know for a fact that there are lots of people in this city where we are who went to other churches and had the same experience. So I've got to believe, you know, for any person that is just feeling really just burned and just broken and just feeling like they just got just completely ran over, that it's like just heal and be, and that's okay. It's okay to just heal and not need to, you know, there's no checklist you need to walk through in order to get healthy again. I think it's just more or less like, be okay if that healing takes a while. And I think there's a lot of people who will walk with you that are okay with it taking a while too.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
That's awesome, man. Wow. I I see no better way to end this episode. I mean, dead on, man.
That's awesome, dude.
So we've really enjoyed this, man. We really appreciate you taking the time to come talk with us. Like, I think this is going to be hugely beneficial to a lot of people out there, and you know, that are hurting and that have been hurt, you know, by organized religion in general. So before we let you go, though, the album comes out September 16th.
Yeah,
it's called Amira Dimly, Citizens and Saints. Where can people find your music, and what's the best way for people to keep on top of what you guys are up to?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow us on Twitter, citizens_saints. The same thing goes on for Instagram, Facebook. I don't remember what it is, but it's just search Citizens and Saints, and you might find it. But that's good. Social media. We do have a good bit of shows coming up this fall. So you can just be checking on our website for that. We're hoping we will be on the West Coast. We'll be in the Midwest and also on the East Coast. So looking forward to singing these songs and just sharing them with people live as well.
Awesome. You guys coming to Columbus?
You know, actually, I'm not joking with you. I just heard the other day that is a strong possibility. So
it better be.
Yeah, come on, man.
It freaking better be.
We got to make it happen. So
absolutely, man. We'll promote the heck out of that, man.
We'll just do a podcast episode where we're just underscoring the entire thing, and you guys.
Perfect. Well, again, we really appreciate it, man. People listening, pay close attention to our Twitter. The week this drops, we may or may not have some album giveaways, so there might be a chance to get that record. So thank you again. We really appreciate your time, man. This has been really beneficial for us, and I think for a lot of people listening. So thank you.
So much fun, man. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Really appreciate what you guys do.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon when you're in Columbus.
Yes. Yes. In the flesh. I'll be there.
Awesome, dude. Thanks a lot.
Yep. See you guys. I'm not who I was. I am who I am. A sinner saint. Stumbling saint.
So you know what I really love about A, this record, B, Zach Bolan, Citizens and Saints, and that whole conversation we just had? I just realized we did something. You know what we just did?
What's that?
Back in the day of this podcast, which is just a few months ago, but back in the day, we were talking actually with Brendan Strawn on that interview that we did with him way back when about just how Christian art a lot of times is so bad.
Yeah.
And how it's just not honest and it's just following a formula and it's like stamping out the same old crap all the time, which is funny because the liturgists have a podcast about Christian art or religious art, I think,
yeah,
right now. And man, listening to him talk about mystery and doubt and struggle and, you know, trying to make heads or tails and just God's love and like all of these things and letting these things pour out in beautiful music.
Yeah.
We got to talk about that finally.
Yeah.
Ah.
And I think it's interesting because regardless of the genre or the type of musician that we've had the honor and privilege of speaking with, going back to the beginning, no matter how long they've been in the industry or, you know, like I said, what type of music they happen to play or, you know, whatever the case may be, all of them have kind of said the same thing, whether it's Derek Webb or K-Max or Brennan or whoever, they've all said the same thing. Like, yeah, we could stand to have a little more honesty in our writing and our dealing with our struggles instead of just sugarcoating it. Like, everything's great, you know. Like, what does Peter Rollins talk about? Like, what would happen if all the worship bands in the world started writing worship music about like the crappy parts of life, you know?
Right.
Everybody would leave church depressed.
I love that. But like, you know, actually bringing up P. Rollins, like what he talks about in liturgy, how liturgy is the technology of theology.
Yeah.
And theology is full of the full spectrum of human emotion and encounters with the divine that leave our heads more cloudy than clear. And there is that through the mirror dimly thing and all the stuff we just covered with Zach, you know, coming out of the falling apart of Mars Hill and, you know, his whole story and all the things that he's been through. That's what needs to come out in honesty in music.
Yeah.
And, oh man, being a part of that kind of culture that's just totally co-opted by a corporate mentality, co-opted by capitalism.
Mm.
Co-opted by the powers that be, essentially. There couldn't be, in my opinion, this is going to sound like I'm throwing every megachurch under the bus. And in some way, in some ways, I actually am, even though they're not all bad and they're not all bad all the way through.
Right.
But megachurches, in order to become megachurches, have to, in some degree, just totally get in bed with the power structures of our culture and our society. And there couldn't be anything more anti-Jesus than that. There right. just can't be. It's just pure and simple. Let's just call a spade a spade.
And we do have it on the docket to do an episode on deconstructing church coming up actually in the next couple months, where we're going to dive into that a little bit deeper. But I think in conversation, you and I have talked about multiple times how the structure of the megachurch, like no, I don't think there's any person out there who's equipped to handle the power that comes with that position at the top, you know?
No way.
And so we sit here and we're so shocked and surprised when that person buckles under the pressure
right.
of all of that power.
Yeah, you get caught drinking too much. You get caught diddling the secretary. You get caught embezzling money. You get caught being an a-hole. You right. get because nobody can handle that kind of power.
Nobody.
And if you're handling it, you're probably being robotic,
mm-hmm.
which isn't necessarily, you know, one of the cardinal sins, but it's definitely not the way of Jesus, who was,
right.
you know, ruggedly human.
I think Rob got out when the getting was good.
Absolutely. I totally understand why that guy was like, love you guys, but I'm out.
I got to go surf. I got to go to LA and surf now.
Yeah, man, that was good. I just so appreciated his honesty. There wasn't even a whiff of bitterness in Zach's voice, in his story.
No.
All the crap he's seen and been through, and he still puts out this beautifully redemptive but honest album.
Yeah.
That was awesome, man. That fit right in with our series about just stories and how deconstruction isn't always this intellectual thing.
Right.
Sometimes it's just the shit of life that just hits you and you've got to deal with it somehow.
Yeah, and I think if you want to tie all three of our episodes together, you have Brennan and Glennon who both...
Brennan and Glennon.
I know. I was like, way to screw it up, Zach. Like,
seriously,
and then
dude.
There's Zach.
What's wrong with you?
Can we go with his last name, Glennon, Brennan, Bolin? I don't know. That flows a little better.
Works a little bit better.
Yeah. But like if there was something to tie that all together, you have Brennan who is dealing with these deep issues, and you have Glennon who is dealing with these deep issues. And all as Rollins would say, to kind of bring it back to Rollins, you know, they manifested in these symptoms. You know,
yes.
like it was like putting a band-aid over like internal bleeding, you know, like
yeah,
it
man.
Just you know, it just kept manifesting in these really negative ways, these really harmful ways. Until they were just, you know, like the only thing they could do is heal through truth.
Yep.
And so, you know, as opposed to running away from the pain, as Glennon so perfectly put it, you know, they all three of these individuals just see it as part of their journey now.
Mm.
You know, like Zach, like you said, isn't bitter. He's like, this is just part of my story. This is part of my journey. I've learned and grown from this. And so, you know, again, here, let's tie two of our favorite people together.
Are you going to go Roar?
I'm going to go Roar.
I knew you were going to go Roar.
You know, where he talks about, like, you know, I think he's referencing sin in this situation, this example, but he talks about, I don't think you should give up your sin until you've learned what it has to teach you.
Dude, that comes out in almost every book that I've read from him. And every time I read it in some way, shape, or form, I go, oh, that's so good. And I know it's so true.
Yes.
It's so true. So many people are trying to rush past their pain, their sin, their brokenness.
Yeah.
They haven't learned to welcome it. They haven't learned to stop using it as a source of guilt, shame, and self-hate, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And how are you ever going to get past something if that is always something you have to either just deny or repress or whatever in order to function? You haven't dealt with it. And so many people listening to this show have been through some kind of traumatic. The thing about religion that's so crazy and weird is a lot of times it's connected back to our parents and our families and our identities in some way. And when we start asking questions about creation or salvation or God or language or whatever, all of a sudden things feel really shaky and people start leaving and blah, 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 and you're in deconstruction. And so many people, I would say, take a cue from Brennan, take a cue from Glennon, take a cue from Zach, and look at how they've gone through just the most agonizing things, and they're not bitter.
No,
they're not bitter.
They carry their rock bottom around like a badge of honor.
I'm not sure I can say that completely. I've felt so just inspired by these people.
And on top of that, the way I think the thing that Glennon really brought into focus for me when speaking with her is it kind of made me think back to that parable that Peter Rollins tells in his Pints and Parables. So for those of you that haven't listened to that episode yet, please go back and listen to it. But he tells this parable of this woman who loses a child, and she's grieving, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's walking around trying to find anyone that can bring her child back. And so finally, after, you know, this is the obviously short, less cool version and not in an Irish accent, but this I don't know what he called him, a priest.
Holy man,
yeah. Says, you know what, if you can find a home, I need to make this potion. And if you can find a home that has not dealt with some sort of tragedy or suffering, bring me mustard seeds from that home and I will make you this potion and bring back your child. And of course, we all know that that doesn't exist.
Mm.
But in the process, she's able to heal. He gives her this gift because she comes across a home where this other mother had lost a child.
Mm.
And they could walk through this pain and grieving together. And instead of trying to cover it over with something and give her some sort of cheap fix,
mm.
she's actually able to enter into her pain, enter into her grieving, push into it, as Glennon would say, and really just heal from it.
Mm.
So
this has been really fun. We didn't plan.
No.
On this, you know, these three kind of really rugged, raw, personal stories that come from different angles and vantage points. But I hope you guys all felt as warmed and touched and inspired and provoked.
Yeah.
Disturbed as we do.
Yeah. And maybe a little comforted, hugged, and healed.
Yeah, you know? Hopefully.
So if you like the music, again, check out Citizens and Saints. Like I said, in a couple days, on the 16th, this Friday, their new album drops. Please go out and get it. And as always, with any of the bands and artists that we get permission to use on our show, if you like the music, please go out and purchase it. Try to help them out. Go see them on tour and get on social media and let them know that we sent you. Mm-hmm. That's a big help to us so that we can continue to get really great music to use for the show. So,
all right, guys. That's all we got. For now, we are your hosts. I'm Adam Narlock.
And I'm John Williamson.
Keep deconstructing, everyone.
If I gained the world, would it be worth the price to work these hands to death and not be satisfied? Every effort brought another sleepless night, I'd be so tired. I have strived enough to know that this divide could never be repaired through countless second tries. Still I stay the course, avoiding what is right. Now I'm so tired. I'm just so tired. Surrender all I have to follow.
traded cherished truth for worthless lies. Raging through the earth for treasure I couldn't find. Wallowed in the mud for nothing but my pride. And I'm so tired. I'm just so I'm right where I belong.